Okay, the recording has started. We're Anne.
And Matt.
And Matt Costello.
And today is September 24th, 2017, Sunday. And we're going to do validation, radical acceptance, and primary emotions. And everybody, I would like to ask you to make sure you're on mute because all the noise around you will be very distracting to hearing people. If you have any questions, you can take yourself off mute. It has to be a global question, not a personal question, and you can ask us a question about things. I also want to tell everybody that October 1st is next Sunday, and that's Alan Frazetti. He's going to do mindfulness. So I will send everybody information again about that, but that's next Sunday. That was the only time I could get him. So I know it's a very short time. So, okay, we are going to do some refreshers you want me to give the rest of them?
The rest of the schedule?
Oh, all right. Matthew would like me to give.
Speaking as a Feeling Connections leader, I would enjoy hearing what's the lineup for the next six, 7 months.
Okay, okay. And everybody else should be muting. Hello. Mute, mute, mute. Okay, so next Sunday is Alan Frazetti. It's October 1st. He's going to do mindfulness. The next one will be November 19th, and it's Meshulam Gottlieb in Israel, and he's requested a 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I think it's probably in the middle of the night for Meshulam.
I've been there.
Yeah, it's in the middle of the night. So he's 3 p.m. next time. And I sent this out to everybody anyway. December 17th.
What's the topic?
His topic is Module 6 Notes. He's going to talk about Module 6 Notes, which we have a lot of people have different ones. December 17th is going to be Cheryl Kempinski and Donna Shields, and they're going to do Observing Limits, which everybody loves, December 17th, and that's going to be at 4 o'clock Eastern Standard. The next one is January 28th, Dr. Alec Miller. He's a Westchester County here in New York. And he's a very big DBT person. And who's the person he works with?
Well, he co-authored the adolescent DBT manual.
Von Brüningen now.
Jack.
Louise?
Are you on there, Alex? No. So you should be muting. Everybody should be muting. Who's the woman that he works with?
Jill Rathaus.
Who?
Jill Rathaus.
Jill Rathaus. So she may be on there also. I'm not sure. But he's going to be doing Adolescent DBT Skills.
Yeah.
That's January 28th. Yeah. The next one will be March 18th. Karen Hall, yay. And I think it's her internship, Salome Van Wouterman. They're going to do Early BPD Identification. So that's going to be great. That's March 18th. And then April 15th is Jackie Mesher and Joy Sprague, Dear Man and Give Fast. We all love that. And then the last one is May 20th. It's Marie-Paul Di Valdivia and Beth McCrave. They're going to be, this is very interesting what they're going to be doing. Please put yourselves on mute. Teaching family connections when your loved one is not doing well.
I need that one.
So Matthew and I
can use that one now, actually.
Matthew and I have two children who have borderline personality disorder, and they have been using skills, and radical acceptance has been going quite well with us right now. You never know. Okay, so we are both elementary school teachers who are retired. Matthew is a professional writer of novels, TV shows, and games, and all that kind of thing. He travels through Europe everywhere. We have done 18 family connection classes in New York Presbyterian Hospital in White Plains, New York, for about 8 years. And we served on the NEA BPD board also for a while. Let's see. So Matthew's going to give us a little overview of exactly what we're doing and make sure everybody's on mute. And again, if you have a question, a global question, not a personal question, you can unmute and ask a question. Okay?
Okay. Right. So what we're going to do, we actually did with our alumni class today. We picked these three skills, and we're not actually teaching the three skills or reteaching the three skills as much as picking certain aspects that we've come back to and deal with our families all the time that we're going to go and talk about from our perspective, from the 18 classes, things we've wrestled with, our families have wrestled with, and perhaps how we've dealt with that. Why these three? They seem to be the bedrock to families changing. All the skills are important Even the smaller skills are important. But these are really core to families changing the way they interact with their loved one. But they also pose challenges in the teaching, the grasp, the use of them that we keep coming back to. So that's why we picked these particular three skills that I'm going to dip into today.
Right, and how we approach them, the certain aspects of each of them have seemed to key family changing over 12 weeks. They become very different after 12 weeks, and we approach them frequently in the way we feel comfortable. So it may not be the same as you're doing it, but we use our manual, and a lot of the things that I'm going to do here are from the manual, and we will be using that with the families also. And we just had our support group today. We have it once a month, and it's so great to see them. And they've made so much progress. It's wonderful. Okay, so validation.
So
that's the first thing.
Talk a bit about validation. So one thing people struggle with, and we struggle as leaders, is to point out the fact that there's always something validatable. So we have people, we're in the New York area, our classes tend to be large. We tend to get some major problems. It's not just an argument over the cable bill, and it's not they won't pick up their laundry. Think of the biggest fish you can think of, and yeah. They bring it into our room in New York Presbyterian. And often the case is, what's there to validate? And so we spend a lot of time peeling it apart, is that there is always going to be those validatable elements at a very basic level. You simply say, you can hear what the person is saying, the emotions they're expressing, the words they're using. What you're simply, in a mindful way, seeing at that moment, you can validate. And it's important also to remember, I think it's in certainly in the recent trainings, Alan has been emphasizing, you can ultimately invalidate the invalid, but we always say that's after a lot of validation. So slowing things down, spending time talking, looking for the things that you can actually validate. And we always bring them back to the core parts of the skills, which in your manual is going to be, I guess, the two different ways, basic right. ways you can validate.
Right. And before I say that, I'm hoping that you all have validation statements that I don't know if they give those to you when you take your leadership training. But if you want my list of validation statements, you can email me. And you know my email because I send everything to you.
And we're
going to
dip into those.
And we're going to go through a couple of the ones that we really like very much.
Okay.
So so for validating, there are, of course, the two types of validation. One is the verbal type. And one of the things that we tell our family members that they are our heroes because they work very hard with skills. They're getting DBT skills, and they're working hard at being communicative with us. So the verbal one, of course, and we're going to go through some of the verbal validations, and we're going to talk about ones that we like particularly. And, of course, the other one is a behavioral validation. In other words, you can give them a hug. You can give them a smile. Just do an opposite action, a smile, pat their hand, or whatever it says. But also, with all of the hundreds of family members that we've worked with, some of them, their children do not want to be hugged, do not want to be touched. So you can use other things, another way to do behavioral validation. The thing that I enjoy doing for validation is being mindful and listening to my children. I listen very carefully. And it's very they appreciate that I'm listening to them. We can go through some of them. I also have a star here that we've taken many of Alan Frazetti's leader trainers, trainingships, and I have lots of notes that I take. I take notes all the time whenever Alan speaks. And one of them, the cornerstone of value validation, is the overflow of good feelings. Even if you don't feel good, because frequently we don't, you can act like you do feel good, and you will then diffuse the situation because you're not going to make it worse. You diffuse by being kind and loving towards them.
And he has said in trainings that we've gone to, you can't validate too much.
Yeah.
And we actually advise people to slow things down as much as possible when they're in their class. Spend as much time as you can to peel apart every single aspect of what is going on, even though what's going on may be very difficult. It may be very difficult to be in that mindful moment, but to be there, define the parts that you understand, communicate that understanding, all the basic things you were taught during your trainings to do, in practice can be very, very difficult, especially when extreme things are going on that don't involve laundry on the floor or putting the cereal bowl back in the sink, but something much more major than that.
But also you are 50% of the child and yourself, and you're the one who is able to manage your emotions. And they have a very difficult time managing their own emotions. So you're the one who's in charge of your emotions.
And that's an important thing to tell them, because I think people, when they start classes, walk in and say, well, I have my offspring, my relative, my son, my daughter, who is all over the place, and they're outside the bubble watching it. And it's part of the idea of it being transactional, that it's an interactive transaction. And if you're modeling only not the validation, the empathy, staying level when someone else has trouble regulating their emotions, it's really important. And to watch that growth of the 12 weeks is really interesting to see.
Right. And also, don't take it personally when a loved one is attacking you or screaming in your face or whatever. We had a wonderful today. We said you need to do observe your limits, because the daughter continues to scream in her face all the time. And observe her limits and see what she can do. So let's see. We can go through some of the ones that we have.
And these came from many different places.
Oh, Mary, here's your Marilax.
Hello. Hello.
Press mute, please.
Unless you have a question, which is fine, ask a question. But otherwise, if you'd be on mute, it'd be great. So a lot of these, you know, came from Alan from the trainings directly. Others came from family members and different sources. So we have a very large validation list. And we're just going to go over a few. In case you don't have this, it's important to have it, because in our case, it provides a script for some of the families. We've had people say, it's on my refrigerator, it's in my back pocket.
Sound my telephone.
So when the phone rings, ding, ding, oh, look who it is. Look who's calling now. Instead of relying on whatever pops into your head, initially, to have these statements there be very important. Eventually, you hope it becomes very natural to do it. But having that little bit of a script is important.
Right.
So I'm just going to go through a few. I'll do a few, then I'll do a few. We'll mix up some probing questions with it, and then we'll press on. So one would be, I can see that you're very, and then fill in the blank, upset, sad, frightened, scared, mad at me. I would maybe hold off on mad at me, because it would seem to me it invites like, yeah, I'm mad at you. I'm really mad at you. But I think, you know, we've been told, and it makes sense to us, that you can guess at what's going on, what you're seeing emotionally, and sort of conveying that to them. And sometimes if you don't know what's going on, you just see a lot of emotion. I think our family simply saying, I can see that something's going on here. I can see that something's really happening here. And then the other part of validation would be looking for the Me Too moment. So a statement such as, well, I'd be blank, upset, sad, frightened, scared too. Often our families, again, they come into the class, their loved one's in the bubble. It's like putting a hurricane in a jar. They're in the jar, but we're okay, we're all right. And you want to try to find the thing that normalizes what's going on. Because imagine if you're dysregulated, we'd say to them, what if you're upset? And someone can find that bit of empathy where, like, yeah, if that would happen to me, I could see feeling something like that.
And you have to know your own loved one to say things. We had a mom today who said, when she says to her daughter, oh, well, that makes me very sad too. And the daughter says, well, I'm not going to tell you anything anymore, because it makes her sad too. So she doesn't use that word anymore. She doesn't say that.
And we did talk about the phraseology. Family connections is about anything, in my opinion. It's about every word carries weight, and every word carries meaning. So it's how you say it. So if you said something like, well, if I was in a relationship and my boyfriend walked out like that, I think I'd be pretty upset too. And immediately you're in the boat with the person. And I like metaphors, not sure why, But telling people to get in the boat with someone seems to work. It seems to close that distance between the relative with BPD and the loved one. Often we don't know what's going on, so having an expression like, I don't understand, works, very simple. Or help me to understand. I'm trying to think this through, and can you help me understand what's happening there? Or what am I not getting? We often seem to jump and try to fill in the dots of what's happening with loved ones, and I think we try to encourage our family members to get every bit of data that you can, to understand every single aspect
ask questions.
That you can. Not in a way like they're in the hot seat, but I'm interested. I want to know what's really going on right now. Because then you'll get the full picture, not just a little slice of this regulation that might be in front of you.
Well, also, somewhere Alan said, if you can't find something to validate, do fact-checking. Ask questions. Ask them questions in a kind, quiet way. Like, well, how much money did you lose? And were you on the subway or were you on the bus?
And how many police officers were there?
Yeah, thanks for that. All right, so on our validation statements, I should probably cut and paste it somewhere else. The number six is, would you like my opinion? That is the last thing you should ever say to your loved one. Would you like my opinion?
Now, not the last thing in the sense, like, that's the last thing you should say, but in terms of when you say
at the yes, after you've talked to them and you've spoken to them and you've validated and you've used lots of validations, and then at the end you could say, well, would you like my opinion? And sometimes they say, yeah, sure. And sometimes they say, no, thank you.
And again, talking about the families you'll be working with or have worked with, often they walk in the room, and that's the first thing. They want to give the opinion right away. They have their opinion. Yeah. But hold back on that is really important.
Yeah, and so we always ask if you want the opinion or do you want to know what I think. We also have, when you try to give them advice or talk about something, you can say, well, do you think, is that being fair? Am I being fair? Does that make sense? And they'll say yes or they'll say no. Well, it's not fair. And so you keep talking and chatting and keep validating them. And again, listening to them and mindfully listening to them is also very validating. And if they can't do any kind of validation, we tell our families in the group that if you validate an emotion, it's very important to do that. And you can see that they're sad or they're upset, you can validate their feelings. And so if you can't validate an actual thing, you can validate a feeling. Okay.
Yeah, and so you mentioned questions. Just a few questions for you to think about. Again, Anne has a whole list we can send. And this also provides family members a little bit of a script. As long as they know, you don't begin with questions. Like, the first question is, can I ask some questions? Which in itself is a question. So you're starting that process by asking a question. But see, is this a good time? You know, when someone is raging and talking about something that's going on, and the police did this and that happened, it's probably be in listening mode rather than question mode, good thing. Mm-hmm. But later on you may say, well, that last night or when we're talking, and find out more about it. Is this a good time to talk? You know, sometimes it's hard to refrain from diving in and asking questions. So just checking, is this a good time to talk? You feel like you want to talk about things? Can we talk? Tell me more. Now, we mentioned this today in our alumni class, which that's once a month people have taken our class, they drop in. And the incident that you're talking about, you may actually not want to know anything more about. So it really takes opposite action and that genuine interest to look them in the eye and say, tell me more. I want to understand what's happening. Because maybe very painful. And that's where self-validation comes in, too, to validate the feelings you're having in this dialogue while still mindfully staying in the moment and validating them.
Well, also, you may say, I need more time to think about this. We had a mom the other day, and she said, my daughter came in at midnight, and I can't talk to her. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. And she sat with her for over an hour, and she probably was not able to really function very well. And that's when we said, observe your limits. Talk to her about when you can talk to her. But we always tell our families that you need time to think about it. Mm-hmm. And the first time You say that to your loved one. They go, what? What do you mean? I need to know right now. I need this now. You need to tell me right now. You say, well, I need to talk to Dad, or I need to talk to Mom, and I'll get back to you. No, no, no. You have to talk to me right now. No, I need this. I need this now. You say, no, I'm going to get back to you. I'll get back to you in 35 minutes.
Yeah, that's the important part, though.
Yeah.
They may need a time frame when you're going to return to them and talk.
Some of them will, yeah.
But slowing things down. Right. I mean, the one thing, but I guess we've had like 450 people in our classes. One thing that they really have taken away is that slowing things down makes a difference.
Yeah.
It's like imagine you're John Wayne and you're walking at slow. Well, I'm probably dating myself by saying, okay, forget that.
But it's the first time you say it, your loved one is not going to be happy. But the second time and third time you say, well, I need time to think about it. I'll get back to you. And now our children, when my daughter calls me, she'll say, I know you have to talk to Dad. Can you loan me $10,000? And I say, well, I'll get back. Well, she never said that at all.
What if there's no dad or mom to talk to, though? What
to say, I need time to think about it. I will get back to you. I need time to think about it.
Right.
And it's very important. And after a while, they buy into it.
That brings up something interesting, which is a side issue to this, which is that buying time is not just, say, ploy. In a way, we say you want to become a rock they can depend upon. So when something is brought to you from your loved one, that they're going to get the same thoughtful response each time. They're going to get the same person who's taking their time to think over their issues, come back in a thoughtful way, and not just sort of have a knee-jerk, very fast response. And so I say, picture your loved ones at times bobbing in a choppy sea, rip currents all over the place, and you're going to try to become that rock that they know they're going to go there, and it's going to get the same steady response each time, and validation is key to that.
Right, and the new one that we just got from one of our family members, she went, wow,
Yes. Wow. Well, many people like to say it, you go, wow.
Wow.
Or you go, wow. You know, like...
And you're just listening.
Right.
You say, wow.
Dad, I'm in Illinois, and I don't have the car, and I'm currently in the state prison.
Wow.
if nothing else, it buys you just a few seconds to let that all input your nervous system.
Yeah.
Let all your feelings respond to it before the mouth opens and words and questions
but
come out.
But that mom says that all the time.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
That was really good.
Yeah.
Do you want to do questions?
Well, I think we'll press on because I just did a few questions.
Yeah, we're running out of time. We have to move on.
But before that, anybody out there in TV land have a question they'd like to throw away? We'll move on to the next area.
Okay. But also, you can validate emotions, feelings, beliefs, their values, and you can accept the greater chance of having a genuine dialogue if you validate them. They will open up and they'll be communicative with you, and you can validate valid, which can be very difficult.
Right.
Okay.
At a baseline, if someone is thinking something, no matter what it is, you can validate, I hear that you're thinking this. And that's a pretty safe ground to be in at the beginning, but it's coming to your thing to validate.
Right.
So moving on to, and again, we're not reteaching skills today. We're just dipping into different
dipping
aspects
in. Yeah.
That we commit. So radical acceptance. We do radical acceptance with our alumni group a lot because it's the elusive skill. It's the elusive skill because you can intellectually grasp it. You read the words, it makes perfect sense. And then when things are good, you can get lulled. It's easy to radically accept things when things get steady and level. But for our families, then that first speed bump comes and then things get worse. And it can often go flying out the window. So it's something people have to keep coming back to and revisiting. And same as we do. We're family members. We have children, and we're in the same boat they are. We can get lulled as well. So it's less easy these days, but we can get lulled. And then there's the difference between radical acceptance and resignation. And the material does a good job of explaining that, but it's something you may need to talk about because it means not being passive, not approving, It simply means accepting that this is reality, because that is reality, and then going forward and dealing with the reality, learning there's things you can do and things you can't do with that reality. So it's important to clarify how acceptance also includes working towards change or positive development, so that you look at you wake up in the morning and say, this is the way things are, I accept it. And I think the material does a good job of saying you must accept it with your full heart, open hands, embrace it, that this is reality. And we're going to talk about a few examples from the material about that, but it's really, really important. So hints on doing that, and you're going to do the prayer in a second, right?
Yeah, but we also do a lot of mantras with our family members. I give them cards. I hand out cards, right. And we talk about mantras. And radical acceptance is what, mod 4, so we've already met them 8 times.
Right.
And so they're pretty comfortable with that. And then we share the mantras, and a lot of them are really wonderful.
A phrase that'll keep you from not getting lulled. Mm-hmm. And also, when you get up in the morning saying, I don't want this life, and why me?
Why
to
me?
To the universe. And I was talking today about, 62 million years ago, all those dinosaurs looked up in the sky. They said, what? Why me? It's the universe has this rule, and things happen. And people deal with a lot of things. People all around the world right now, right this moment, dealing with terrible, terrible things happening due to nature and various other things. And that is the reality. And you can be most effective when you deal with it. So the mantra is important. But we also say that Thich Nhat Hanh, for example, said in one of his books that you should have something on your ceiling or on your bureau that says breathe. So when you get up in the morning, you breathe and say, wow, I'm alive. I took a breath. It's a brand new day. I would say you could also have an index card on your bureau that says accept the good, accept the things that we describe as not good, accept what's happening, and recognizing that the universe has its own rules, and a lot of people all over are dealing with things that need to be accepted.
Right. Well, I'm going to read the definition of radical means that you accept from the depth of your soul, in your heart, and mind and body, and you stop fighting the reality of the trauma. And basically, you do some meditation, and you also will sadly have to grieve for a while, and it may take a couple of weeks or a month or a year for you to grieve, and then you have to move on and accept what you have in your life. And meditating about it will be helpful also. And there are many, many free meditations that you can type in on Google and do meditation.
There's a new app you put on last night called Calm, which has guided meditations.
Yeah.
And, grieving, when people laugh a lot in our classes, but they don't laugh a lot the first 2 or 3 classes.
Right.
Because they come in and they are grieving. And part of the process of the 12 weeks, I think, as a leader, you're going to see them work their way, hopefully through the grieving part, to where they come to the acceptance part when you're ready to teach it. And it's an equation we pass on to them.
Yes. An equation of which you all have done, probably, is pain plus non-acceptance equals continued suffering.
Right.
And they have to meditate through that so that they can not suffer anymore. And we do remind them that they're at Family Connections for them, that we can't change their loved ones, but we can change how they feel about things and how they respond to things. And they do. They're wonderful. It's absolutely amazing watching them.
And against that 50% rule, you're in charge. You can be in charge of your feelings. You can be in charge of how you feel, the way you process feelings.
Right.
You can be in control of that.
So one of the mantras that a family member gave me was the Serenity Prayer, which was so funny because yesterday, Matthew and I, we prepare what we do at our
Support group. Yeah, it may not sound like it, but we rehearse this.
Because we do it in the support group. We always prepare for the support group. And that last night, we watched Transparent with Jeffrey Tambor. They did the Serenity Prayer.
Wow.
And we haven't done the Serenity Prayer in over a year. And there it was, done within 24 hours.
It still sounds wise.
It is. So it's grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's a serenity prayer. And that was one of the moms that gave us a for her mantra. But I've heard that. I remember when I was a little kid.
I like the idea that the serenity, courage, and wisdom are the key thing. We also bring a few things into this discussion. Like, for example, we talk about the gentleman who had his arm pinned when he was hiking.
The movie, 127 Hours.
Which I couldn't watch, actually.
We haven't watched it.
No, I was watching it.
Oh, you did.
But the moment comes when he realizes nobody is going to come and free him. There's only one way to move forward.
He radically accepted.
So he had accepted,
right.
I am trapped, and did what he had to do, and then got a great movie deal
and
a book deal.
And made a million dollars.
Married. He's on TV smiling, so going forward. And
I don't remember his name.
And I think this week, the movie on the Boston Runner, I forgot the name of the film, with Jake Gyllenhaal opened, and that's the moment where you stop railing against the universe. You accept what happened. And then the work can begin. The things you can work on, the things you can do and begin. So, like validation, this is a topic when you hit this. Intellectually, it's very easy to grasp. And we have doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs that come to our class. Intellectually, they nail it. But practice, someone said today, the practice of radical acceptance.
Yeah.
And also, when things do get good, very easy to
fall
accept.
Down that slippery slope.
You know, we had a good 6 months, and a few months ago, we were a little wobbly, and so it's important to come back to.
And the other thing that we use is the Roberto Benigni's Life is Beautiful.
Yeah, right.
It's also radical acceptance. It's a Holocaust. It's an old movie. It goes way back.
Right.
But if you haven't seen it, catch it. It's
because he recontextualizes the whole concentration camp experience for his son. Which
like
is like, he dealt with the reality, he saw where he was, this is my son, and he did what he had to do. The last thing, and it's in your notes, but so you certainly can refer back to it, is the higher the pain, and we had some people in our room today had pretty high pain levels.
Mm.
The higher the pain, the more the anger, I'm going to talk about anger in a minute, the harder radical acceptance is.
Mm.
So, as we say, it gets more difficult the more things that are put on our doorstep. Okay, before we press on to our last topic.
But wait, did you want to talk about the obstacles of radical acceptance, that there's annoying and being passive and being resigned?
Yeah, well,
obstacles.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And well, I think the important thing is in teaching this to, and it's a fine line, like you're saying accept this, but I'm not resigned.
Yeah.
You know, and just know it's going to be a little tricky. In a very interesting way, it'll test your own understanding and teaching abilities. But we find that the more we have dealt with this, the deeper the experience has been for us. So you probably will find that as teachers as well.
Oh, and I have my Einstein quotation. If you do what you've always done, you'll get what you always got.
Right.
So how to change.
Right,
what
you wake up every morning and you say,
and feeling,
why me?
Yeah. And if you change, we do a lot of that.
Right. So before we press on, another opportunity, we'll have, in the end, we'll have like 5-10 minutes. You can ask questions and make comments. But if you have any question you'd like to ask now, unmute, ask it, or we'll press on to our last topic.
Of primary emotions.
Say once. Good touch.
Thanks, Jeff.
No. Okay. So primary emotions. Primary emotions is the third one we picked. And if you notice, interestingly enough, actually Ann noticed yesterday, we've gone backwards. We started with a validation in terms of the manual. We started validation. You go towards the forward, and you come to radical acceptance, and now primary emotions. So we've gone. This is like gone back to core and bedrock. So why is teaching primary emotions important, and what are we emphasizing here?
Okay.
So
what we
tell people is identifying primary emotions. Once you know what a primary emotion is in itself regulating. Right. So imagine your families, or imagine you, because you're a family. I assume most of you, if you're a teacher, you're also a family member. Something happens, and whoosh comes the flood of feelings. For some of us, it might be right. It will feel like it's anger right away. For some of us, it might be other things. So if we respond to that, we may feel like, you know, a tsunami just knocked us off and is carrying us away. So identifying the emotions, for example, you get a call 3 o'clock in the morning, the car's been wrecked, in another state, hello, the troopers are there, and we actually had someone who had a state trooper story today.
Mm-hmm.
So you identify what are your emotions, what are the things that are going through that you're feeling and thinking right now. By doing that, it slows you down. You're sorting out all your feelings as best you can. Now, again, not easy to do, because the way we're wired is like, well, it's a different kind of wow, almost. Like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's true. If the car is wrecked and you're in three states from here that I didn't know you were at, is regulating, is like slow things down and say, what am I really feeling? What's really going on here? And so we spend a lot of time on it. And one thing we do is?
We make up a list. Right. So we've had 18 classes, and we've been doing primary emotions and emotions, actually, not the primary emotions, emotions, all the time. And so we have an easel in New York Presbyterian Hospital, and there's an easel there. And I ask people to tell me what emotions you're feeling, what kinds of emotions with your loved ones. So I would say there's about 100 here. And every year and every group, we pull this out again.
Every now and then a new one comes up that we haven't heard before.
And I get maybe 10 more, and then there's 10 more. So we have a lot of them that people gave what they feel, they actually feel. Mm. And so we put them in here. And
panic.
Panic.
Paralyzed.
Grief.
Pity.
Pity. Revulsion.
Fear of the unknown.
Paralyzed. Some people feel paralyzed.
Yeah,
totally paralyzed. They don't know what to do.
What's interesting is
perplexed.
That someone once asked, can we actually have good emotions too? And we said, oh, yes. No one told you couldn't have good emotions. So eventually, you know, things like gratitude.
Enthusiasm. Excited. Love. Happy. I have a lot of them.
You haven't sent this list out, but we could, you know, I think it's best you generate in the class. Tell me some emotions.
Yeah, we didn't generate. The family members generated.
And we do it non-judgmentally. Someone says something's an emotion. We make sure it would be a feeling, but it goes in the list. And someone asked today, said, when we were talking about primary emotions, he said, fear is a primary emotion. And the answer to that is, well, fear could be, potentially be, but we're going to get into what is a primary emotion. And then, and here we go straight to the manual in terms of what a definition of a primary emotion is.
Primary emotion is the initial response, and we say it's the core. We put the word, the core response to a particular event. It's normative, it's typically adaptive, and it's effective. That's what they say right here. That's Alan Frazetti. Let's see.
And what's the secondary emotion?
Well, the secondary emotion is an emotional response to the primary emotion. And it's an emotional response to another emotion. And it's usually problematic. So the example they give here, that you have fear, and then all of a sudden it becomes anger. Or you're very disappointed, and then you're angry. And all of you're seeing sometimes is you're feeling the anger, and if you back up a little bit, you can see how disappointed or sad or fearful you are that has caused you to be angry. And Alan Frazetti has told us that anger is terribly toxic in a family members who have borderline personality disorder or any kind of mental disorder or any family.
I don't think anyone likes anyone angry at them.
Angry.
I would hazard a guess that people.
But we had an interesting thing where if someone knocks on the door, should tell that story.
I'm going to get that story.
Okay.
So
what we also have here is that Alan has said, prepare yourself for sliding down the slippery slope. An immediate reaction is not always accurate.
Right.
And it says, go back to page, to number 8 on 32T. And 32T, it says emotions labeling accurate or inaccurate. That's the steps in identifying emotions. So sometimes you're not identifying. Now, most of our family members, they go, well, I'm mad. I'm angry. I'm very upset. What are you talking about? And it takes us a long time to tell them that there's something there before the anger. And if you can talk and think about it, it can actually change your emotions.
The common thread in these three things, which is now becoming clear to me, is each of them are times where we apply the brakes in the teaching and really slow it down, because for us to get it across and on our own understanding and for people to get it, really needs to take time with people. It's very non-intuitive. So just a few thoughts on what Anne read there, but, you know, because maybe you've taught a class and you said, well, it's normative, typically adaptive and effective. That's the primary emotion. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean? So let's take the first one. It's normative. If your loved one was supposed to be home at 10 o'clock and now it's 1 a.m., it is normative to be afraid, to be worried.
Scared.
It's normal.
Fearful. All of those.
Very normal to be, okay? To be adaptive. Well, if you're afraid, there's things you can do. You might be making a phone call, or try to find out what's going on, calling a friend. You can act on that fear. And also, when they do come home, probably at 3 a.m., and they're a little under the weather, as we used to say in Brooklyn, and they come in at 3 a.m., then it's adaptive. You can talk about your fear, my fear. I was worried the other night. Right.
Well, when you come in, of course, what happens is you're not fearful or worried. You're screaming at them and you're angry. But we have taught our family members that that's not the primary emotion. The primary emotion is the fear and worry and sadness and frightenedness and all that. And when it's easy to get very angry with them, because I myself have done that with my daughter when she was about 12 years old.
But you don't get angry.
No, this is a long time ago. Okay. Oh, way, way long time ago. You can say to them, we'll talk about this tomorrow. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Go ahead, give her a drink of water. Well, tell her go to sleep, and we will discuss this tomorrow.
Or maybe not even say that. I mean, to be honest, if someone comes at 3 in the morning, what is the effective thing to do in the moment? The effective thing to do is, have you had anything to eat or drink? Are they dehydrated? If they obviously come in and they're under the influence, the effective thing is that they should get to bed with a glass of water. To start that conversation then is not effective at all. So primary emotion is effective in the sense that if you are dealing with fear, if it's disappointment, if it's sadness, let's say you're sad about something that happened with a loved one. If you're sad about that, two things. One, at some point you can discuss with them about, what's sad, but also what do you do for your own sadness? What do you do to soothe? What do you do to sort of minister yourself to sadness? So that's what primary is. Now the question is, can anger be primary? Can anger be primary?
Well, here's an interesting thing.
And the answer, which I believe we've heard Alan explain this in class many times, and seems to, as we say, make sense from our teaching, is anger cannot be primary. And it can't be primary because something has to feed into you to make you angry. You have to be afraid, disappointed. They walk in the door, you're angry. You have to look at something that's happened. You have to have a thought. You have a feeling. You get angry. So someone mentioned, we've been discussing this.
Well, because we were talking about that anger in your family is toxic,
right?
You can't have
so
anger.
So even if it was primary, it's toxic, but
right.
I'm saying it's not primary, and I'm going to tell you a story.
Okay, there's a funny story.
So probably all of us had this problem. The doorbell rings, ding dong.
And this is one of our siblings came.
Oh, yes.
Not a sibling from one of our family members.
Someone brought this out to a class. The doorbell rings, ding dong, go to the door. You open the door, and someone punches you in the nose. And he says, I'm immediately angry. There's nothing before that. They punch me in the nose. I'm angry. And for a minute, I'm hesitating. And I'm thinking. And I actually asked our group today, and it was really interesting. I said, is he right? And the group today was remarkable because they said, actually, the first thing that happens is you're going to be startled.
Shocked.
And then, shocked. And then someone said, and I said, anything else? And I said, the next thing is, might be afraid. Because you have someone going door to door, punching people in the nose. That's a little scary, right? And then you may indeed get angry. Mm-hmm. So even in that extreme case, because I don't know about you, that's not happened to us. No one's not knocked on our door and punched me in the nose.
No.
Even in that case, there are other things that have to happen before you can get angry at that person. And the preposition at is interesting. If I'm afraid of, if I'm disappointed by, it suggests doing something that I'm afraid of.
So your preposition.
Disappointed
you're
by.
Using,
if I'm angry at someone, if I'm angry at Anne, that is directed against her. It has, and trust me, if I get angry at Anne, she's probably going to get angry back at me. Or maybe not. So you're in a combative situation. So based on our teaching, our understanding of the material, listening to Alan, but also really practice, believe it or not, anger is not primary. Conveying it to people, teaching that to people, because especially we get a good breakdown of male and female.
Yeah,
and
50-50.
Nothing against my own gender, but they do seem to have a little bit of trouble in terms of holding on to anger. So
yeah.
They wrestle with it because anger feels so natural. And one thing we mentioned is maybe it feels so natural because anger is directed at something. It clarifies that mist. If I'm afraid of something to happen with my loved one, I may not know what to do. But if I'm angry at them, I do.
Yeah.
Yell at them.
But see, I think sometimes if you are with a stranger who's done something, I think anger is probably okay to be a primary emotion because it's the first thing that someone, and they're not your loved one, they're not a family member.
I disagree.
Oh, you do?
I disagree. So, because, now, first of all, in terms of practice, we say, yeah, you can get angry at the postman.
Oh, for practice.
Or
right.
Anyone else. You can get angry at whoever you want to. That's right. But if you want to have that skill in your fingertips, it's important that you practice moderating your anger anyway. But I also say, even this person who randomly did something to you, this other, someone rear-ends your brand-new car. You just got a Jaguar XKE. They still make those. Fresh out of the thing, and someone rear-ends you. Before that, there are going to be other emotions, including terrible disappointment that this beautiful new car you're driving home to show to everybody has now been damaged 10 minutes out of the lot. That comes before anger. But also, you can indulge anger with shopkeepers. You know what you just did here. You can indulge anger with anybody. But if you want all these skills, we refer them to our class people that if you don't practice it sort of all over, when you're in the middle of the hurricane, not to mention hurricanes, but in the middle of that storm, will you have those skills there? So it's an important thing to consider. The last thing to say about primary emotions, and I might say, we're giving you our take based on the training and reading the material. Other people may have different takes. And I know there's probably a lot of different authorities out there who have done a lot of work on emotions using emotional meters and stuff and have different theories. So this is simply our take and our understanding. But it makes sense to us, and more importantly, it helps our family so that when one of their loved ones destroys the 56-inch 4K HD TV, they can possibly not get angry at them. Oh, and we'll have some babbling on here. But the other important thing is we're not making saints. I still feel anger. I feel anger every day at different things. Except when I feel it, it's a signal, what am I missing? What am I looking for? And that begins to regulate me. I came from Brooklyn. My whole family was dysregulated. They were borderline all over the place. Terrible things.
Yeah.
It regulates me to think, what am I missing? Feeling a little sad about that. Feeling a little abandoned by that. Mm. And it helps to regulate it.
And when you do finally figure out what your primary emotion is, it also will bring you to observing your limits. Because if this occurs at one point, you have to observe limits and work with them. And we do have somebody who's going to be doing observe limits. I think it's Cheryl.
It's Cheryl and Donna. Cheryl convinced
yeah.
Donna on doing that.
Yeah. Because observing limits comes up all the time with our family members. And they have a very difficult time with that. And Matthew and I used to write down things on sheets of paper. And then when we were going to talk to one of our children, we show up with the paper, with our notes. And they were very comfortable with that because we wanted to make sure that when you're going to get involved with something, you want to stay with what you're trying to think about and you're not going off to something else. You're staying on the topic.
And it's bringing that thoughtfulness to it again, that whatever's being discussed, being brought up, it warrants that I want to make sure I'm understanding and getting all the data here. The one last statement on this, and maybe then if there's any questions, we'll take it. So if not, we won't. I think Alan has mentioned that it's okay for us, and we've also heard of behavioral tech trainings too, to guess at someone's emotions state. Again, wording's going to count, how you phrase it. But if you're not sure what's going on with a loved one, our family members, for example, don't understand what's going on with a loved one, they can try to figure out, are you feeling this? Well, and really get precisely what's going on. Because sometimes they'll be exhibiting, say, anger or rage. And what's hidden there is maybe a sadness. So they may not be in touch with their primary emotion of what's really driving them. You're hearing the anger and rage, and underneath that is maybe sadness and disappointment. And that's where it comes full circle back to validation.
Right.
So you're really angry at this person. Yeah, I'm really angry because they said they were going to go with me to this thing and they didn't go. So I'm guessing you're also a little disappointed they didn't go with you. And so that way you can peel apart from their anger, which maybe the white heat is all you're getting, and get most under it. You want to throw, see if anybody has questions?
Yeah. Does anybody have any questions that you'd like to ask?
Or even comments, critiques?
I do.
Okay, good.
Hi, who's that?
My name's Carolyn Landon. I'm in Houston. Good afternoon.
Wow. How are you doing down there?
We're doing okay. It's pretty incredible driving around the streets.
Yeah. Oh, terrible.
Our performing art spaces are ruined, and everybody's having to, you know, the opera, the symphony, the ballet, it's a huge thing to our justice system. We don't have a jury place to put jury. I mean, there's all sorts of layers to this they're not talking about in the news. But anyway, we're good.
Okay.
I'm good.
We're
my
so
family.
Sorry that happened. Yeah. Been a rough.
So let me get to the question. I've loved your teaching tonight. I want to ask about a few more ideas about how to teach slowing down. I think that's such an important. I mean, there's so much white heat in these moments, and I loved you had a woman say, "Wow, that was great," and
yeah.
Let me think about it. That's a good one. Or, you know, let's talk about it. Tomorrow. Is there anything else? Any other phrases or any other techniques that you could share that we can help other people slow down?
You don't have the validation statements?
I do have those.
Okay, so you have those. All right.
Well, here's one thing we talked about today, because someone actually kind of asked that question today, which just shows you, you know, we can go from coast to coast, and all these families have very similar things going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just gave them, because we're in the same boat as they are. You know, we're the teachers. But so the phone rings. Ring, then you go look to the caller ID. Okay, oh, I knew that person. And then you have to prepare yourself for how that call can possibly go. So one thing is, I don't pick up the phone right away. I take a breath, because I'm changing gears from, let's say I was chopping onions, thought I could cook, or maybe I was working, I was writing. I'm changing gears to one thing, give myself a little time to change those gears. So third ring, I know I'll grab the call. So that's one thing to do. And the other is, then this is where mindfulness comes in. If I've taken that call, to be on that call and mindfulness, Alan's talking about that next week, how not to say, I want to get back to making dinner. I want to get back to my work, to just sort of let that call breathe and exist and be as mindful as possible with it. And I once asked Alan during a workshop he did at Silver Hill, I said, when I get a call, I tend to like to go out my deck and be out my deck with the sky and the trees. And I said, am I avoiding that? And he said, no, that's becoming part of your environment. So the call and whatever stress or not stress may be with it, because some of it's going to be a perfectly fine call, you're just improving your environment. So taking your time to do everything, and I guess reminding yourself to when being pressed, that you have the right to take things slow.
Okay.
And I think doing mindfulness, paying attention and just listening, and I often take notes.
Yeah,
I take notes so that I can think about what I need to talk, and I'll get back to you. And if they call me on the phone, I take a lot of notes, and I'll tell them to what Matthew is, because if he's not there, and he'll do the opposite. He will give me notes. He'll say, oh, well, this is what we're talking about. That will slow them down, too, because you're mindfully listening.
Right.
And you're going, mm-hmm.
And you're slowing you down.
Yeah.
Slowing you down. And so, you know, some people tend to respond right away. And I said, if you're a right-away responder, you need a little card that says, breathe. It says, you know, take it easy. Listen. As you can see, I'm probably not the best listener in the world, so I need to constantly remind myself to just listen, get the information, even now, and that slows things down.
Do you think that is helpful? Have you told that with your family members there and as a leader?
Talk
about those things? Yeah.
That's good. I think, yes, I mean, I don't want to take up any more time. Maybe there's somebody else with a question.
I don't know.
Oh, that's a good question. Thank you.
That's a good question. Yeah,
it is. Thank you. Well, you can. Yep. Well, actually, that was a judgment. I got to be careful.
Oh, yeah. See, that's a judgment, too. Yeah. When you say something is, oh, that's a good question.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Great job of the questioning there. Yeah, I would say, you know,
thank you.
Yeah, see? The mouth sometimes can get ahead of it. Anyone else have a question?
Can I ask a question? My name's Frank, and I'm bringing from Australia.
Hi, Frank from Australia.
Oh.
Wow. What time is it there?
Wow.
Yeah, wow. What time is it?
7 a.m. on Monday morning.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Good morning.
Yeah, I've been
good
there
morning.
A number of times.
Yes, I love it. Yeah.
So you have an ongoing NAABBD Australia site up there, right?
Function? Melbourne?
Do we?
No, in Australia.
We
have they're moving and happening.
Melbourne
is Australia. So question then.
We are running a Family Connections group, and one of the participants asked us a question which we didn't quite know how to answer, which was which might be the skills that you're talking about, but they specifically asked about what would they do, what are the things they need to do if their loved one expressed that they want to either do self-harm or commit suicide.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's interesting you asked that because I wasn't in our last group, maybe the group before. We had four families that didn't just have suicide ideation, but bona fide suicide attempts.
We've lost two families.
And we've lost two, which the percentage-wise is low, but that's small comfort in that. And we actually came back to, we wrote... you know, members of the board and people saying, whoa, over our head. And we did come to, we got advice from a lot of different people, which we were appreciative, which is that, let's say you're talking about validation, and let's say, or you're talking about primary emotions or any of these skills, when someone says, brings up a suicide threat, it kind of brings you out of the skill area. And brings you into a different area. Alan did a presentation on suicide preparation, which should be archived.
Preventation, how to prevent suicide.
A plan,
to have a plan, yeah.
So it's an archived call where he goes through it, and I won't bother summarizing it, but I think, let's say if someone in class said, you know, my, and whether it's a idle threat or it's a bona fide threat or attempt, I think it's something, what we've said is, That's an issue that's really, really important. It's life and death, and it kind of changes what we're dealing with. So we will focus on that with you and have a discussion of some things you can do. Because otherwise you'll be I think you'd be in things that we're probably not all that well trained and prepared to do.
Right.
At the same time, we have done with our alumni class, we did a 2-hour session on using Alan's notes as a guideline, because we have so many
we had 50 people.
It was packed with people dealing with self-harm and Sometimes it's threats, sometimes ideation, and it's some basic things to do. So you might say, no, that's a really important question. It's a life and death question. Mm. We're gonna think about how we can tackle that within the context of the class. And then make a special focus at some point, whether it's the whole group or them, where you're going to deal with it. Because it just brings you, I mean, if you're doing validation, I can see you feel very bad. The material is very clear that when someone threatens self-harm, it's not actually the time to validate that time.
Yeah.
It's a time to deal with that threat.
Yeah.
And dealing with that threat means the family members need a plan. And we used Alan's great notes to help us pass on a plan.
Are they on our website?
I believe you can get them on the website. But if not, they'll write. Yeah.
Can I make a comment on that?
Sure.
Very scary to me. I really like that you brought this topic up because I live in Connecticut. My daughter goes to school at the University of Miami. And, you know, we're talking on the phone, and we're scared that she might actually self-harm herself. And we, you know, we don't want to call an ambulance, but we're thinking in the back of mind maybe we should, or maybe one of her roommates will, and, you know, because you don't want a lot of times ending up in a hospital and then in a psychiatric ward for 3 or 4 days isn't the best thing that, you know, for women with borderline personality disorder. But sometimes you really don't know, especially if you're just on the phone with them and you can't see them. It's difficult.
So I would recommend, you know, because I said we had 4 families last class, and in the end of the day, we got it sorted in terms of the class. We had a balance there. I do think one family felt like, well, if we're not going to talk about all the suicide threats, then perhaps this is not the class for us. And they might be right. What I recommend is if you can find Alan's call, and if not, we'll track it down, email Ann, she can pass it on to me, and I can do some digging. What's really useful is when that moment occurs in the phone conversation with your daughter, or it's a face-to-face, or whatever it is, you have prepared all the different responses and options, and they also know what you've prepared and what those responses or options. So it's not like on the fly saying, well, maybe we should do this or maybe we should do that. You actually have a clear idea of what you can do within the limits of doing that. Because I think what happens is, you know, if things are good, we're not thinking about them, all of a sudden somebody says, I'm thinking I want to just end things. And we become a deer in the headlights. And especially, you know, if the therapist isn't available, and unless they're a GBT therapist, they're not available. So, and you go, what do we do? So I've listened to this, and I don't know, we're not having a call-in on it, but I found his tremendously valuable, and as a leader, and to be honest, as a leader, and also simply as a parent, it was helpful.
That is at this moment. That doesn't happen often, but that is a pretty powerful.
Yeah, I would even say this, that, you know, if you do track it down, listen to it, and you'd like to talk about it, feel free to give us a call. I mean, we talk to people lots of times, and I'd be glad to. I mean, again, not stepping on belly, but I'll say how at least we dealt with the passing it on to people in our families who are dealing with that in a very real way.
Yeah.
And so if you need to chat through the ideas and what did he mean when he said this or that? We could spend a
Is there time. Depression involved here with her?
No.
No.
Really?
Okay.
Well, emotions and, you know, and you get really, your fear. You really have fear
it's a terrible fear. And maybe the last thing to also add in this is a lot of our families are dealing with these, you know, it's a big issue. It's probably maybe the biggest issue. As I said, you know, we've lost 2 people. We have recommended people. It's very important. In certain cases, you have your own co-pilot, your own professional, who the confidence and trained to help you with that plan.
Yeah.
So it's one thing building the plan on your own to deal with the whole range of self-harm, suicide, behavior, and your responses.
Somewhere I have Alan Savetti's plan.
I have those notes I could send to you.
I have
so
it.
So drop Ann an email.
Send me an email.
I'll write back to you.
Tell me your name.
Lisa Clone. I'm going to see Alan at August 30th at Ron's group in Newton. So I'll ask him directly when I see him.
Great. We have this whole, it's an hour-long call and just like this, and as I said, we found it dealing with some of the same issues very useful. One more question, then we should end it because we're over time.
And this is Ming Ming. I was wondering if there's we have that question come up in our support group too, and if you can send that to me, that would be great.
Then if you email Costello.mn.
And you can pass it on to me, and I'll get them.
Yeah, I'll send it out.
Because I'm home tomorrow.
Sorry, can you email in Australia? Because we don't have that directly. Can you just tell me the email so I can email you directly from Australia?
Okay, you can email me, and I'll track it down. It's matt@mattcostello.com. And that way, Ann doesn't have to forward it to me. So matt@mattcostello, C-O-S-T-E-L-L-O.com. And
two T's in the mat, or one T in the mat?
Two T's in the mat, one C in the Costello, and two L's in the Costello also. Thank you, everybody. I hope that...
Well, the next one is Alan Frazetti, October 1st. That's next Sunday. Mm. He's doing mindfulness. And then November 19th, again, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Moshulam Gottlieb from Israel is doing Module 6 Notes. And I'll be sending you all information again. You'll always get my information. And thank you so much, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for what you do. Thanks
for
devoting
what you're
Sunday
doing.
Sunday to this.
Yeah.
And enjoy the rest
thank
of
you.
It.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.